Hello, you're listening to Third Waves.
Third is a platform that amplifies underrepresented voices through print, events, and on the airwaves. You're joined by me, Tribe, DJ and radio host.
Me, Daniela, writer, musician, and producer.
And myself, Rona, stylist, founder, and editor-in-chief of Third.
This is With My Niger Sisters. Welcome back. If you're tuning in for the first time, we recommend you checking out the other episodes too. But you can also just dive in here with us.
On this episode, Maria, Faith, Tribe and Rona talk about the tribes in Nigeria they are from and the traditions that are associated with them.
So Nigeria is having a moment in the cultural landscape at the moment, for sure. And I've always been really interested in Nigeria, obviously, because it's where I'm from and going to school in the UK, like the knowledge, the resources, it's all Western based. So like what you learn about Africa in general is just non-existent anyway. But I think with like the growth of like Afrobeats music and the availability of things like Nigerian restaurants and jollof, obviously a lot more people are at least coming into contact with Nigerian culture. And the premise of this series is really just to find a space where similar-minded Nigerian women, non-binary people can chat and discuss about the things in our culture that we love, that maybe we even loathe, and we have a record of that. So this episode is on tribes and traditions. And one of the things I actually found out when I was thinking about how to like set out this episode was that Nigeria actually has 371 tribes within it. I was like, I always knew the number was huge, but 371, I was like, wow. And some of the small tribes are like Ijawi and the Kanuri people, the Igbo people, but obviously the big ones are obviously Hausa, Igbo and Yoruba. And I have three amazing guests here with us today, or two amazing guests and my fellow co-host Tribe. I'd love for you guys just to firstly introduce yourselves, tell us what you do, and also what part of Nigeria you have your roots from.
I am Maria Pearl. I am a art director, graphic designer. I am Nigerian, and the tribe that I would say I was from, I would say I'm Yoruba, but my mom is Ikala, so that's more low key. But it just depends on my mood. I'll just say I'll go between the two.
Cool. My name's Faith. I'm a multidisciplinary artist, so work mostly like in visuals, and I make music. Just not come out yet. Coming soon. My mom is from Delta. She's a Yoruba, so I'm a Yoruba, half Nigerian, half British.
Hey, my name is Tribe. I am DJ and also co-host of this show. And I am Yoruba, and my mom is from Osun.
I'm Rona. I'm the founder of Third and also a stylist / costume designer. And I'm Igbo. Both my parents are Igbo. So before we get started, I'd love to ask you guys a really fun, unrelated question, which is, what is your spirit animal?
A black panther.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah.
Needs no explanation as well.
Love I guess it. So. This was before the film even came out. Like, I just always liked it. A female black panther, to be very specific. I just think they're mysterious and cool. I like the fact that it was much later on in life I realized that they have spots on them, that they're not just all black. I just think they're interesting and pretty.
Like yourself.
Thank you.
I was actually going to say probably a big cat as well. I'm not really sure why, but I think of myself as kind of feline. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. But then also, I don't know. Yeah, I'll just go with that. Some kind of big cat. Mm. Yeah.
I'm in a transitional period when it comes to this question. I used to say like dolphins, because I love being in water and stuff, and I just feel that connection to water. But hearing the full scope of what dolphins do, I had to like quickly distance myself from that. And I, somewhere between a flamingo, I don't know. Maybe ask me in about a year's time when I've processed.
I'm very anti-dolphins. I'm really anti-change. Yeah. Right,
someone said dolphins have the best PR of the ocean.
No, they do.
Because they get away with so much. Like, we just love them.
Yeah. Dolphins and hippos, honestly.
So, yeah.
I would actually say I'm an elephant. Mm. I, like, love elephants. I just think they're, like, my spirit animal. Kind of, yeah, maternal, like, powerful women as well. Yeah. So I'm an elephant. So kind of just to kickstart us into the conversation, I wanted to ask you guys what we kind of know about our tribal groups, just because growing up, I think, you know, I was always be told stories about being Igbo. And that's how I think I came to like understand like how being Igbo was a thing that was different to some of the other tribes in like Nigeria. One that my mum would tell me all the time was that like Igbo people are super, they're really good at business. She would just be like, if you go to Nigeria, all your uncles, they have businesses, they have companies, they can turn anything into gold almost. So I've always grown up with that idea that like I come from a line of people who can do that. I think another thing that my mom also would share with me is this idea that in like her culture, children are really brought up by the community. And she'd always say like, you know, if a child is doing wrong, it doesn't matter who the adult is. They can turn around to the child and say, no, don't do that. And that's just kind of accepted. And I think that's kind of weirdly been ingrained in me as well. But what about you guys? We have kind of three different mix-ups or two-ish different mix-ups here. So, yeah.
My understanding was that, yeah, I heard the Igbo, I guess these are all stereotypes, right, of being industrious, and that Yoruba people are the artsy ones. So the writers, well, not always, but the writers, but the artists and the musicians, you know, the ones who embrace like the Afrofunk and all that kind of stuff. And another thing, I guess, is the Orishas as well, and the worshipping of various gods. Those were the main things that I kind of stereotype Yorubas as. Also kind of savvy in a business way. Sometimes a bit too savvy, as we all know, with the 419 and stuff like that. And I guess when it comes to Yoruba stereotypes, I also agree community is a big thing. So festivals, getting together, celebrations, weddings and things like that are big moments to unite people in that way.
Funny one, my dad said when my parents met in Nigeria, and he said that, oh, he was dating a Delta woman, the first thing he heard was, oh, they are a troublesome people. So I've definitely heard that a few times. What else? It's funny because I think like a lot of my mom's connection to her tribe has been moving away from it rather than immersing herself in it. So I don't know.
My story is actually quite similar to Faith in the sense of like my mom embraced more of like the Christian side. You know, she's a reverend now, you know, all of that. But just in terms of being Nigerian, there is a lot of pride there. I think that's like one of the main things. You're proudly Nigerian. And then I know about like the Yoruba vim, which I know I have. It's like a Yoruba vim that you have. And you just, if you know, you know, kind of things. But yeah, also, so there's one side of me where my mom, she was from like the village. So she doesn't have like the most positive light on that, because that's her experience of Nigeria. And she's just like, even when I'm like, oh yeah, mom, I want to go and visit, she's like, do you know what I had to do to get out of that country? Like, it's not, the country is very corrupt, and she just wants to keep her kids safe. But then on the other hand, my dad, who's like a really big famous musician, he is like part of the culture and the history of Nigeria. So there's just this push and pull that I have. So yeah, it's just very interesting, I think, obviously, because I've been raised by my mom, I have more of that aspect, but then I am still and forever proudly Nigerian.
Mm-hmm. That does remind me, actually, that there is definitely this ongoing fear or undertone, I would say, that I've had growing up about the fear of being entangled too much with other Nigerians, whether it's on a spiritual sense or whether you've been duped. And that kind of being something to kind of scare you a little bit. Well, and it's not intentional, but there's just constantly that level of fear on the tone. You know, whether this person's doing me or, you know, this, this, you know, like I, one of the stories I heard, like, is don't leave like any strand of hair on the floor, because that can be used against you. So little things like that, where you,
superstition.
Level of superstition. And and in contrast to the strong Christianity as well, which is also pushing through.
My mum came to this country quite young. She's always had this thing in her where she wants to like really preserve what she learned in Nigeria. I think it's almost like in a weird way, kind of protecting her identity, if you know what I mean. Definitely. So like growing up, actually, this whole word of tradition was so huge. She'd always say to me, like, I kind of didn't even like it at that time as well, because she'd always say to me, like, it's not our tradition. You know, like it'd be like anything I wanted to do, she'd be like, it's not our tradition. Or she'd be like, Black people don't do that. And I kind of always felt like it was like this restricting thing. And it was only until like, you know, I realized there was so much about Nigerian tradition that I was really excited about and kind of like loved when I was older, that I kind of embraced this idea of tradition. But I wanted to ask for you guys, where did tradition, what sort of place did tradition take up in your households growing up?
I think it was more like the discipline and the respect for elders. I think that's like the first thing that you're kind of taught, like, respect your elders, don't do this, don't talk back, don't whatever. And it's just, that was kind of, that's kind of like your first thing to understand. And then it can go into like the celebrations. And but then with, let's say like there's a celebration, then it comes like the pride. And then with the pride also comes the shame. Oh, you have to look good because you don't want this person to talk about you. You have to do this because you don't want that person to say, what will pastor say? What will this person say? And then it's very much kind of like you said, you feel very restricted, because if you wanted to express yourself, it's like, even, you know, maybe the first day you wear ripped jeans because that's in fashion, suddenly you're wearing rags. And it's just kind of like, what will people say? And then again, that also ties into like the fear that you were talking about. It's like, it's very much two, maybe more than two, but a lot of the times there are like two or more things that are happening simultaneously that can also then be guised under this whole thing of tradition. And I think sometimes it can be used in a really positive way. Like, this is what we do. We celebrate this and we do things this way. And we wear our clothes, our iro and buba and all of that. Like, everything is like, wow, he's just like, look at the lace, all of that stuff. But then I've lost my train of thought. It will come back. But yeah, it's just to do with like a lot of the shame and just, what will this person say? What will that person say? And it's just kind of like, I just want to live my life.
I agree. I feel like to a certain extent, there was a moment in my teens where I almost let go of that completely. I stopped attending church because I already had already decided that it wasn't for me, like Christianity altogether. From year seven already, it was kind of like, let alone by the time of 14. No. So, and then also kind of like letting go of the perception of me. I know like a lot of people are having conversations right now about decentering the male gaze. I feel like I did that, but decentering the, I guess, the Black perception gaze, if that makes sense. And just kind of was just like, this is how I want to express myself. And that concern of, you know, and because my mom is very a stickler for that kind of stuff as well. Like, you know, you can't present yourself like this. You can't do this. For me, it was like to go to the extreme and just be like, this is how I'm feeling today. Or do you know what today? I really don't care how I look. I'm just walking out like this and giving myself that level of freedom. So yeah, I feel like because of the way that that has been entrenched, I feel like I've gone the extreme. And not in a negative way as well, just kind of the way it is.
I think for me, it was definitely in terms of like family structure and like dad goes to work, mum looks after me and stuff. But also like a real emphasis on education and that being sort of like one of the most, I think, prevalent things that was sort of, yeah, just put on me, not in a negative way because I'm grateful for it now. But yeah, there was just always a massive emphasis on going to school and doing well in school. And that just continued from when I was born till, well, not till now because I'm not in school. But yeah, I think that, and I think that's, Nigerians are just big on excellence, I think. And yeah, I think that that definitely translated.
Yeah, I think one of the awakenings I kind of had, especially when I was like obviously practicing as a stylist, was that I realized that my cultural heritage was like this bank I could go to for ideas, and actually customs and traditions, they were kind of like this exciting place for me. So my mum would always talk to me about masquerades. And one time when I was really young, I believe I went to this masquerade. Half of me says believe because I'm like, did I actually go or did I imagine myself there? But she would always tell me like masquerades were like this fun thing. And obviously you can't look at the masquerade. But then that became an idea for like an editorial I did in my like late 20s. Do you know what I mean? That I felt like was really establishing me as a creative. So I was wondering, like, I know we're all creative people here, but like what aspects of our cultures do we kind of, or our cultural traditions, do we kind of dig deep into, or do we want to explore more for ourselves?
I think now, I would say going into 2024, I really want to like delve deep into it a bit more. I feel like being Nigerian, yeah, you do have a sense of pride, but then there is like that side of you that needs to be westernized in order to get through life. And I feel like I'm at the stage where I've got enough, like I know enough. I want to actually go back to my roots and understand, because as much as, you know, I can say I'm British, like I'm not from here. I'm Nigerian first. That's how I present myself, as Nigerian first. And I feel like now I want to really like go back into things, because again, bringing up my dad, he was just able to be himself and just be really free. And I was watching like a documentary he was in, and I haven't finished watching it, but just even from the clip, I was like, this guy literally traveled the world, lived his life, wore what he wanted to do. He's used as like inspiration and stuff like that. And I was like, this is my own flesh and blood. Just that in itself is already enough for me to like continue for the rest of my life. So I was like, even outside of him, what else is there? Like you said, there's hundreds of tribes. And I just feel like there's an immense amount of wealth that is there. So yeah, I'm just kind of willing to explore that. Like, even still, I don't understand Yoruba fully, like properly, and I can't speak it. And it's something that I didn't really care about when I was younger, because I grew up in like a predominantly white area outside of London. And I remember just being like, I don't care about Yoruba, I don't need it. No one speaks it. And I came back, now you got Asake running Yoruba on a track, and I'm just there like, yeah. Okay, cool. So that's when I'll say that I'm a Kala, so they'll leave me alone. So they're not like, oh, you don't understand Yoruba. I'm like, oh, I'm a Kala. And they're like, oh, I've never heard of it. I'm like, great. Yeah, so I just, it's not even now because Nigeria is on the map. I just feel like with age, it's just kind of what comes as well. Like the void gets bigger and bigger, and it's kind of like, do you know what? I just want to piece some things together and just understand, what is it that makes me me?
I agree. Especially with the language part, and getting older and thinking, what am I going to pass down? I am proud of myself for picking up as much as I can in understanding Yoruba off my own back, because it wasn't like no one sat me down. It was just kind of like trying to piece it together. Yeah, exactly. you know, you got to do what you got to do. And even from a young age, I knew that that was actually quite important, because I would purposely like ask my dad to kind of purposely speak in Yoruba to me as much as he can. But my mum didn't really, she was just like, I just need to communicate, like, don't bother me with that. But
thinking about going back to Nigeria recently and struggling, people having conversations around you and understanding like parts of it and not understanding all of it, or having to make an effort to make sure you understand as much as possible, whether instead of it coming kind of like second nature to you, I did feel that void. And think, like I said, what am I passing down? Like, is that ability to speak my mother tongue, as they say, going to be lost within that two generation? So it is something that I, in terms of connection and what I hold and want to bring forward is the language. One of the things that I have treasured though, as a Nigerian, is the music, as you mentioned, Asake, but also, as you know, I do the High Life and Sunshine show, and that was part of my way of like reconnecting to the music that I used to hear, especially my dad playing as a kid, old vinyls or old like videos of just like random stuff. As a kid, you're like, what is this? And it's just like, you know, and at the time I'm like, look, I just want to watch something simple. What is this? But as you get older, you kind of appreciate the artistry and its own historical legacy that went into those moments. And so like, even just kind of the way that I think it was a university friend who introduced me to Two-Face and Wizkid and all that kind of stuff. And she's Egyptian, Nubian Egyptian. And she was like, yo, this is what's happening in Nigeria. And I was like, no way, what? This is, how do I not know about this stuff? And from there, like, I just kept an ear in, and just there's a level of pride knowing that these are my people creating this music. And then to see from that like level of like Wizkid, Don't Dull, to where we are at now, I think it was Rima who just sold out O2. And that's again come from the people of your culture who's had to kind of be as resourceful but celebrate their culture in a way that translates across the world. I think that's something that I want to continue delving into and bringing to the forefront and celebrating as a Nigerian.
So I think for me, an area I've been trying to delve into much more is like connecting with my culture through food and learning how to cook different types of Nigerian food, especially because I've been living with my mum this year, and it's the first time, because I went to boarding school, it's the first time we've sort of lived together since I was like 11, so like properly. And I just realized what like a massive part of my upbringing and connection to culture was food, and like my mum being able to cook all this stuff for us. Like, I want to be able to do that for my family, like 100%. And so, yeah, I kind of take it as something I'm more interested in, and almost like a spiritual practice in terms of trying to connect with ancestry and your roots and stuff. So that's probably the main way I'm like trying to connect more these days.
Has it come into your artistry?
Yeah, definitely with music for sure. Because like, I've always loved Afrobeats. Like, to be fair, less so now than back in the day. Like, I was having this conversation with my friend, and he was like, "We need to make Afrobeats Raz again. It's too main." Like, and obviously it comes with the progression. Like, it's a lot more mainstream now. It's a lot more commercial. Like, there was just this like raw energy to Afrobeats back when it was Don't Dull and P Square and like all these people that I just love. But yeah, I definitely hear like the influence of that artistically in the music I make. Like, I make other types of music, not just Afrobeats, but like just like the flow and the energy of stuff. Like, I definitely see that influence there.
So finally, I kind of want to touch on like a big, I think, Nigerian cultural practice, which is obviously our weddings. Firstly, kind of like, what are Nigerian weddings? How can we distinguish them? But also, are we having them? Do we want them? So yeah, any thoughts on that?
I was literally having this discussion yesterday, talking about traditional weddings and stuff like that. I don't want to have a traditional wedding. I have 4 siblings. I'm the only one that isn't married out of the 5. None of us had traditional weddings. We just kind of went on it. My mom was like, listen, like, it's just a waste of money. At the end of the day, she was like, it's just a waste of money. It's not that deep to her. And I've been to a few, and I was just kind of like, Like, I wasn't really that engaged. And I think over the years, a lot of the traditions and the customs have died down or been polluted or have been more westernized or changed and adopted to fit today's society. There's a lot of things for my mum, especially just who she is. She's a very strong, independent woman. Like, you cannot tell my mom what to do. You just can't tell my mom what to do. And there's a lot of traditions in weddings that I don't think she agrees with herself, and she doesn't want her daughters, because just five girls that she has, she doesn't want so many of us. so expensive. She doesn't want her daughters to succumb to certain things. And I remember there was a time, maybe last month, me and my partner were out in Harrods, and then we just ended up started chatting to the security guard, who was like Nigerian. And then when I told him, I was like, oh, this is my partner, X, Y, and Z. And then he was like, oh, have you paid the dowry? Like, you know, you're dating a Nigerian woman. Like, they're not cheap. He basically said, like, get your money up or leave. Do you know what I mean? He was like, whatever, whatever. And then my partner's not Nigerian, so he didn't even know what he was talking about, but he was just agreeing, like, okay, cool. And I was like, do you know what that is? I was like, you know, I come with a price, like, you have to pay the bride price. And I was like, it's a dowry. He's like, what is a dowry? So I explained. He was so perplexed. And he was just kind of like, what? And I was like, yeah, my mom's going to make a request and you have to give her these things or you can't marry me. So I know that there are certain things that obviously I was born into, and I'm just like, oh yeah, this makes sense. But there are other things that, like, my mom has instilled into us that, like, you can't. I think my mom has things of, like, us bowing to people or us kneeling for people or people touching our heads and things like that. And those are things that I've kind of adopted. And I'm like, I ain't doing that. But yeah, I don't really care for traditional weddings. I'm not really, like, a big wedding person anyway. I've never really been like I can't wait. It's just, if I could, I literally yesterday have been toying with the idea of getting married in Vegas and just going to a chapel and just getting it over with. I'm just not really that person, honestly. But, like, I also know and understand that growing up Nigerian, getting married is like a milestone you have to achieve. You have to have a good education, like you said earlier, it's instilled into us. You have to have a good education, have a good job, find a man, get married, and have children. That is what you have to do as a woman. That's all. And once you've achieved those things, oh, you can do what you want. You've hit all the milestones. I'm happy. And it's kind of like, babe, 2023.
Yeah, it's so funny hearing you say, like, the sort of parameters your mum put around, like, the dowry and stuff like that, because I think my mum's the same. Like, recently, not that recent actually, ages ago, my sister got married, and I think my mum was really happy. Obviously, it was like traditional.
Of course.
There's the traditional marriage part and stuff, but then she was kind of like, also at the same time, like, covering her back. She was like, so you've given this. She made, like, the dowry, like, nothing. And she was like, that's because you can't buy my daughter. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it was like this weird thing of, like, I'm doing this whole thing because I understand that it's the cultural practice. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm just letting you know that, like,
I'm not selling my daughter.
We'll do culture, but no culture. Yeah. Which is quite, like, I guess, that tension people have with their own cultures, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when you mm-hmm. come to a place like this and you're just like, it just doesn't stand up anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, so please correct me if I'm wrong. I think the dowry system in Nigerian culture, and particularly Yoruba culture, is actually quite relatively new in terms of centuries. I don't think it was the practice. And I've listened to this podcast that was breaking down patriarchy, but how it works in different countries, and you know how cultures adopted westernized forms of it. And I remember them singling out Yoruba tradition specifically and saying that actually before that wasn't actually the way it was done, and this is kind of something that's kind of been brought in over time. So even this whole idea of dowry and all that kind of stuff is, as we see it, tradition. It's not as old as we think. But for me personally, I think I have similar views to you in the sense of, like, you know, questioning marriage altogether, and what I guess long-term union would look like without necessarily the institutions of marriage tied to it. I think my mom already knows how I'm like, and I think hopefully she'll be cool with whatever that will look like. But I think she's not really a traditionalist in that, to that extent. So I don't think she imagines, even for her own daughter, let alone me specifically, that, you know, that we're going to all of a sudden have some kind of traditional wedding and suddenly invite. She's so introverted as well. So I can't imagine her wanting to invite a bunch of people and have this big party.
Must
and
all be that. Nice.
Like she has a maximum kind of battery for. So like, yeah. So I know even for her, let alone me, it's just not the way.
I don't know. I've never really been too focused on my wedding. It's just not something. I'm not one of those girls who was like dreaming about my wedding day. But I don't know. I'm into the idea of like a traditional wedding, like traditional weddings that they do in the village and follow certain ceremonies. I like the idea of including certain cultural practices into my wedding, but what I don't like is the sort of like Lagos wedding with thousands of people and spend loads of my, like, the show. Like, I feel my wedding day is one of the most sort of personal and intimate days of my life. I don't want my partner's father's business associates like to witness me getting married. Like, no thank you, it's not my idea of fun. So yeah, like I'm into the idea of including certain cultural practices in my wedding, but I'm not, yeah, just not into the idea of like massive wedding, loads of people, all for show. Like, I don't want to spend that money on, like, I'm like, let's buy a house. Let's, like, do you know what I'm saying? Let's be like practical about this. It just seems kind of like a waste to me. So I'm not really very into it.
I think I'm similar. I think realistically, I've never been one of those people who have looked towards my wedding as a thing. But I think obviously, like, you know, you get to a certain stage in your life and you're like, maybe I should do this whole thing. Mm. And then I'm like, the Nigerian way would be quite fun. But also at the same time, I know no one should let me, just because I'm not going to follow the playbook. You're going to be so upset. Like, do you know what I mean? So like,
yeah, all expectations.
I'll take all the cultural references and then just make them very weird. And then no one's going to be happy. So I think for the better, I should probably just have a really simple wedding somewhere. Cool. Keep it quite European, but we won't tell my mom that. Thank you guys so much for being my amazing guests in this show. Can you please tell our listeners where they can find you, what your handles are?
You can find me on Instagram. My handle is at Maria Pearly, MariaPearly. I'll be there.
You can find me on Instagram. My Instagram is Did You Die Though, DidUDietho.
And you can find me on socials at tribe.official. That's tribe spelled TRYB.official.
And I'm Rona, so that's Rona spelled phonetically, so that's R-O-E-N-A.
So we talked loads. No, not we. I wasn't involved.
I actually want to include that. Not we. I wasn't involved.
No, I wasn't involved with that one. I was very active listening, as Rona was saying. I was not involved, sadly. You guys talked a lot about Nigerian weddings. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to get from you, like, what do you think are the essence that make up a Nigerian wedding? I've been to one.
Yeah. What was your experience going to one?
It was possibly the most fabulous thing I ever went to in my life. Yeah. I always like to tell people that it was so fabulous that, like, you know, when you go to a, if you go to a barbecue or a party or whatever, you come back the next day, you're close smell of the party, but not necessarily in the best way.
Yeah.
And I came back from this wedding with, and I woke up in the morning and the room smelled so nice. I was like, wait, what's the smell? And it, and I realized it was like all the nice candles that were burning in the wedding had like made my home smell better 24 hours later.
That's the perfect like rubbing off on the people that attend. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the thing that impressed me the most as a foodie was that there was two dinners. So there was a three course dinner.
Yeah.
And then like, trays and trays of Nigerian food got rolled out like within the next 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Second dinner. Yeah. I'm like, these people know how to live.
You don't slide on the food. The food is essential. I would say for me, not traditional wedding. You know that they actually sometimes they do the traditional one. Like sometimes they go locally, do a traditional one. And then there's the big wedding where I think it was it Faith who said, you invite your partner's dad's
business partner. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like everyone's invited. You're slaughtering several goats and cows and it's being cooked. You know, like there's aunties in the kitchen. It's a whole process. There's so much food, as you mentioned. For me, it's the after party where like there's the change of outfits and there's all the bride and the bridesmaid and the grooms, and they're all coming in, and like there's this like music and there's a whole like matching outfits and just turn up. I think Nigerians are well known for being very showy and flashy. Like, it, you know, we want people to know we're doing well, you know, even if we haven't necessarily got it, we want you to know that we've got it, if that makes sense. So that comes through in the weddings, and like the bigger, the better, you know. And so just think, especially with the outfits, everything, it's just like grand statements. Yeah. And it's beautiful because everyone does have a good time, and it's like, it's meant to be memorable, and so much money spent on it.
So much money. It made me very stressed being at this wedding.
They're moments that like you won't forget. They don't want you to forget as well. You know?
I'll never forget how nice my clothes smell the next day.
And it's become a thing as well. When you look on Instagram, like all these different, it's become like a thing to see different weddings and how much they turned up at that wedding and how much money was spent and how grand it is. So even for people around the world, it's known that Nigerian weddings is a whole thing. It's a whole thing you commit to if you're going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even white people, there's like these like, my first Nigerian wedding. And then it's like the ones who turn up on time and there's no one there or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very grand. I thought, bringing it back to the conversation that we had, I think one of the things that Maria, Faith, and I were, I guess, also grappling with is whether we would want to get married and what that would look like, any kind of union. So that was an interesting aspect to the conversation, because it's like, even before we get to whether we'll have this grand wedding, it's whether, I guess, especially with our age group, whether it's something we aspire to in the first place, let alone, you know, how that would look like if we was to take that leap.
Yeah, of course. One of the other things that came up in this episode was about like the obviously tribes and how Nigeria is made up of all the different tribes. And I definitely identified with the kind of that being part of the conversation, because in China, there's so many different ethnic minorities is how you call it in China, not tribes, but like, yeah, so many ethnic minorities from different parts of China, and who have very, very strong cultural traditions, you know, different practices, etc. And I just wanted to share like one image, which is a photograph that I saw this last year at some point when I was in Shanghai at an exhibition of this photographer called Li Hunxing. he's Cantonese, but in Mandarin is Liu Xiangcheng. And it's like he did photographs in the 80s mainly. Actually, no, his career was probably longer than that. But yeah, like incredible photographer. And there was this one photograph in that exhibition that like just moved me so much. It was a photograph of a group of, I can't remember which ethnic minority group they are from, but this group of people who were dancing. I think it's called Dai people. And they have this festival, which is like where you pour water, splash water over each other. And they were dancing because it was that festival. But they were all dressed in that same, like during that era, like kind of the white shirt and the khaki colored trousers and these like kind of military-esque caps. Like that's just like what everybody wore at that time pretty much. And so it's a photograph of this group of people dancing because it was this festival and they all wore basically identical clothes. And it was a black and white photograph. And you could almost see, because all of these groups, they have their own dress. Style clothing, which is like quite popularized, like in, I think, yeah, it kind of part of tourism as well. They kind of, there's a lot of, in more recent times, there's like a lot more pushing of like these kind of images. And if you go to that areas, you can buy those clothes as part of your souvenirs. But yeah, so this photograph, even though it was like black and white and they all dressed the same, in their dance movements, you could see the costumes on their clothes, on their bodies, if you know what I mean. Mm. It's like their cultural personality characteristic from being from that tribe or ethnic minority was like shining through their movement, which was captured by this photograph. And it was just like, it, like when you guys were talking, it really just made me think of that and how like important our traditions are to us, whatever that lineage might be. I felt like you all had that connection with your lineage, even though you all grew up in, like most of you grew up in London or like UK. And, but like these things really come through, like Rona talking about like the quietness of like the tribe where she's from. And I was like, oh yeah, that does make sense to me. Yeah, it's just like really beautiful. And like, I think it's so important to like keep hold of that and find that history and those stories and just, yeah, identify where certain things you or your family does come from. Okay, end of monologue.
No, it's great. Where is that tribe from, the one that you mentioned?
South of China. Oh, I'm going to expose my ignorance. I think it's maybe in Yunnan province, which is like, yeah, south.
And I think that's quite a key point, that you can just buy those outfits, but you would never, unless you are aware of that group and their practice, you wouldn't necessarily be able to show how those dances are meant to come through wearing those outfits. And I think that's quite amazing. One of the things you said at the very beginning was, we called it tribes, and where most people would say ethnic groups. And I wonder where, like, maybe we're just calling it tribes because that's how we call it to each other. Oh, that tribe over there, that tribe. But it's true, because that creates a different way of looking at us, if that makes sense. Oh, that's an ethnic group. That's an ethnic group, as opposed to a local tribe. So when you said that, it was like, oh my gosh. Yeah,
the language.
The language around it. And it's, I remember having this conversation with a Turkish woman at my workplace. This is a charity that I worked at the time. So I was quite surprised when she said this. She was like, Nigeria doesn't have languages. They only have dialects. And I was going back and forth with her like, no, we have languages. And I think this also comes into her not seeing the diversity in ethnic groups within Nigeria, which there are so many. Like, we constantly referred to the main tribes that we just happen to be a part of, but there's so many small tribes that I'm constantly hearing about that exist, that, you know, have their own rich history and traditions and languages. And that's why, to bring everyone together, we have a pigeon and which has bits of Yoruba in it and bits of Igbo and things like that, to bring people together. Otherwise, it's such a wide group that was brought together by the British and modern day Unilever. So that's one thing to kind of put out there. And you're right, like when you hone in on those different practices and traditions, I'm constantly also seeing people do, like, you know, those where they walk in a line and come up to the camera in a video clip. So there'll be like a couple wearing traditional Igbo clothing and like dancing in front of the camera, and then they'll walk aside, and then a Yoruba one will come, and it will be just like the scene, all the different ones and the, how they express. And even when I was in Nigeria, there was a channel specifically for Hausa. There was a channel like for movies, like Nollywood movies. So even within Nigeria, I do think there is a celebration and room for that diversity.
I was just going to say, your point about dialects and language is so interesting. Because, yeah, I mean, even like on, just linguistics is a science, and science wants to draw lines and in order to like analyze and, you know, et cetera. And it's like, okay, fine. But yeah, the line between dialect and language, and what does that mean? And, you know, like French and English, are they two different languages or two dialects? It's like, whoa, they've got loads of similarities, let's be honest.
Are you a Niger babe, know a Niger babe, or want to get to know one? If you've listened to the show and want to keep the conversation going, send us a message with your thoughts about the topic, and we'll read out our favourite responses on the bonus episode at the end of this series. We'd love to hear from you.
Email info@thirdmagazine.co.uk. That's third with three I's. Or message us on the gram @thirdmagazine.
If you want to see some BTS, head to our TikTok, where you can see what went down in the recording of this show.
You can also catch more from us on our website, thirdmagazine.co.uk.
If you're enjoying this mini-series and this episode in particular, you can check out one of the two episodes from our archive on ethical tourism. Search Third Waves Tourism.
And don't forget to help spread the word.
Spread the word!
Share the show with a friend.
Share the show!
A colleague.
A colleague!
Your mum.
Definitely your mum.
Or just rate and review us wherever you're listening.
Wherever you're listening.
Yeah, 5 stars only. Thank you. All of the music you've been hearing on this episode is by the versatile Afro-electronic DJ and producer Sensi Lo. You can connect with her on Instagram at senseilo.